Hello, my beautiful beanies, and welcome to The Bean for Tuesday. First with yesterday's news, I am Glenn ZB. We're looking back at Wednesday. Orcon brings its call centre back to the country. Yelena Dokic has a book out. It sounds like she's had a hard time. The first time you rode a motorbike, and Christmas trees overrated. But before any of that, let's not talk about Christmas Island. Let's talk Manus Island instead.
Here we have the new gun Prime Minister of New Zealand. Ms. Jacinda Ardern, who is making, I've got to say, making a pretty good image for herself, I believe, from this distance, while she's in Asia. Now, I may be right, I may be wrong, but that's the impression I'm getting. Except that she's doing things, a couple of things, Manus Island being one, that does not fall into the general well-behaved group of politicians and diplomats when they get together in a situation like this. Challenging Australia publicly, as we've heard, is not something that is desirable. And I don't mean because they're Australia and we're here and they're bigger and we're smaller. I just mean because we have a relationship and it's part of the way that we approach life. We don't put the boot into each other. Well, she hasn't yet put the high heels into anybody, but she's getting very close to it. Now, she would be, I think, taking advantage of the fact that she is well aware, as we all are, that Malcolm Turnbull's in strife and may not be the Prime Minister forever, which is what he thought when he went into politics. He thought, I'll be Prime Minister, and I'll be Prime Minister, and they'll bury me straight from the chamber, because that's the way that Malcolm looks at life. The point being that she is doing something that doesn't have, I believe, the support of the majority of New Zealanders. Now, it might have the support of the vocal minority of this country, those who want to push back on generally accepted rules and regulations and attitudes, those who find themselves, for whatever reason, sitting on the left-hand side of the seesaw.
Yes, I think Parliament should actually have more playground equipment. It seems very appropriate with some of the goings-on in there lately. Anyway, now, Orcon has brought its call centre back from Manila and are hiring people in Auckland. Turns out people would prefer to talk to people in their own country about problems in their own country. What a surprise.
What has motivated this move, Taryn?
Yeah, we've been operating at an outsourced call centre for a number of years now, and talking to our customers, they're just giving us feedback that they'd much prefer dealing with a Kiwi call centre. So, as you say, about a year ago, we made a decision to bring it home, so it's pretty pleasing to announce that we're doing that today.
How long have you been based in the Philippines?
About 4 or 5 years now, so we gave it a fair nudge, but hasn't worked out. But, very happy that in the next 2 weeks, we're going to bring it all back to New Zealand.
And why hasn't it worked out, the issues with dealing with somebody in Manila? That's been problematic, has it?
Yeah, it's been okay. You know, we operate a pretty good level of service out of Manila. We had a good partnership with the partners in Manila that were running it for us, but we felt that it was just better closer to home. It's a really competitive market, the broadband space, so it's really important that you listen to your customers and hopefully do what they're asking for you to do.
Right, so your feedback, they wanted the call centre here. Were you losing customers because of this?
No, I don't think so. We weren't losing customers, but we don't want to really provide an average service. We want to excite and exceed our customers' expectations. So it was a move that's going to cost us a bit of money in the short term, but we think it's a great long term.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Is a local call centre enough of a point of difference to attract customers? Possibly is. It's very frustrating, isn't it, to have somebody not knowing anything about what you're talking about. Yep, I'm trying to remain calm and collected about this because it really, 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 really annoys me. Anyway, good work, Orcon. Now, Yelena Dokic has a book out and Rachel Smalley has been reading it.
If people didn't see the beatings, someone, at least one person, must have seen the aftermath of the damage that was inflicted on her young body. 10 Minute Tennis Australia rather says without cooperation from those directly involved, in other words, Yelena and her father, they couldn't investigate what was going on. Well, really? I can't tell you what a distressing read this is. It went on for years and no one did anything. No one stepped in. Yelena, despite her brilliance, never captured the heart of the Australian public, mostly because of her father's behaviour. And she sure had her fair share of critics, those who believed she was cold and surly. Of course, now we know why. Now we know why her behaviour was like that. Now we knew what would happen if she lost. Read her story and you'll see her in a very different light. What a brave young woman she was and still is. Her book, aptly, I think, is called Unbreakable. Tennis Australia has some questions to answer for sure. They knew, but they did nothing to protect one of their stars. But it also serves as a warning, I think, not to judge a book by its cover. Yelena, more often than not, attracted the criticism of the Australian public and its tennis commentators. If only people had stopped to question why her behaviour was questionable, why she reacted the way she did when she lost. Commentators and the public said she was spoiled. She wasn't, of course. She was living in fear. What a lonely world she must have lived in. It's a tragic story, really, of a young girl at the top of her game who, in her own words, contemplated ending her life. And a sport that benefited from her brilliance but failed to protect her from a brutality that no one, not least a child, should ever have to endure.
I thought that was how you made successful professional tennis players, by being completely insane as their parent. Isn't that the pattern we've seen time and time again? I must have got that wrong. When was the first time you rode a motorbike?
I grew up on a farm. I can never really remember when I was first allowed to ride a motorbike, but it was obviously very young. And I've grown up with motorcycles and guns. I can remember shooting the shotgun out the kitchen window at a box when I was 7 years old. So Mum and Dad allowed me to do a lot of stuff. So now I'm in my 50s and I've got sons. So it's a new thought for me a little bit. I've got our youngest son is 17 years old, and we've got motocross bikes and we go, you know, to trail rides and bits and pieces, but now he's talking about buying a road bike.
Yes, that's quite a different kettle of fish, isn't it?
Yeah, so I'm sort of in two minds. I've got a road bike myself, and I do a lot of riding around the place. So he's saying, Dad, I can come with you.
Wants to be like Dad.
Yeah, so that's my dilemma at the moment. He was, a month or so ago, he got his car license, his motorbike license, and his gun license. So he's all licensed up now.
Yeah. It is so hard because you are an adult now and you know the dangers.
Yeah. So
when you're young, you don't think about them, and nor should you. I think you do have to be a little bit reckless when you're young to take chances and test yourself.
Yeah, luckily my wife's leaves all those sort of decisions to me on, you know, what the outdoor sort of stuff, what boys can do, because we're still on a farm.
Yeah.
So he is very good motorbike sense off-road, but on-road it's a little bit harder. I don't know. I'd probably give him another year of driving in a car.
Yeah.
Before we head for the road with a motorbike.
Can you still get those three-wheeler ones? I know you have quad bikes these days. You don't see those three-wheeler ones. Did they fall over all the time, did they? Because I remember riding those as a teenager and then running over my own leg with one. That was quite... Luckily, there wasn't much air in the tyres, so I don't think I did too much damage either to the bike or to my leg. Hey, are you putting up a Christmas tree yet?
From travelling extensively from house to house around about December and pre-Christmas, that most people these days don't bother with a Christmas tree. It's one of the last vestiges of a Northern Hemisphere Christmas, and people don't really bother with it now. I've always thought it was a bit of an anachronism in New Zealand, what with wilding pines and all, that we celebrate a conifer at Christmas. So for a while people went with artificial trees. And then in fact people brought trees from students. And Kerry and Evans and Holmesy were always doing stories on students that weren't getting paid. And then there was the whole disaster about what to do with trees afterwards and when they weren't collected. I would think these days most people would not bother with a Christmas tree, and I say rightly so.
Wow. So 14th of November today, 13th yesterday, when Marcus was making those comments. If it's too early to put up a Christmas tree, it's definitely too early to be a Grinch, don't you think? In saying that, I think we might get out of doing too much Christmas stuff this year because we're going away for Christmas. I believe I've got managerial approval to not put up Christmas lights all over my house this year, which might mean that's another year I don't risk falling off my roof and breaking my neck. So that's good news, isn't it? I'm Glenn ZB. That has been News Talk ZB for Tuesday. We'll see you back here again tomorrow for more Ho, Ho, Ho.